377, moved by Councilor Kekkonen, second by Councilor Ryland. Be it resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar is hereby reconvened into a regular open session of Council at
6:30.
6:30 p.m. Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Resolution 25-378, moved by Councilor Zulak, second by Councilor Bascom. Be it resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar is hereby accept the reports, recommendations, and directions arising from the closed session held September the 2nd, 2025. Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. In the spirit of reconciliation and cooperation, we wish to acknowledge the land on which we gather is the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and the Mississauga people. Its boundaries fall within the Robinson-Huron Treaty of 1850 and the Williams Treaty of 1923. We are grateful to live here, and we thank all the generations of people who have taken care of this land for thousands of years. To honor the suffering of Indigenous people and the love and wisdom they have carried for thousands of years, we pledge to work in community and harmony with each other and the environment we inhabit and work towards truth and reconciliation. Back into open session, so I'll ask for roll call once again.
Councillor Morley Haskell.
Councillor Debbie Zulak.
Councillor Nick Ryman.
Councillor Mike Ekman.
Clerk Administrator Carly Britton.
Deputy Clerk Mary Smith.
Chief Billing Official Chris Bordelow.
And Mayor David Ward. Any declarations of pecuniary and or personal interest in the general nature thereof? I have one for 11.2, delegations and presentations. Parents for Curry Sound. So the deputy mayor will take over for that delegation. We have nothing for the public meeting. We have delegations and presentations. 11.1, the 2025 Municipal Insurance Program Corporation, Councilor McKellar, and Samantha Elliott. I believe she's online.
Yes.
Good evening.
So we've got your report. It's quite detailed. I know they want to give a executive summary of what you're offering to us and what we're paying, or how you want to
absolutely do it. Absolutely. I'll kind of work through the report that's been provided to you as quickly as I can, and then I'll just open it up to any questions that may come up at the end. I think the report is pretty straightforward, provides a pretty clear picture, but I'll speak to the increase this term over prior term, so council has a comparative picture. You all have a copy of the report in front of you. All coverages have been offered renewal for a further one-year term effective September 19th, 2025 through to September 19th, 2026. The 2025 to 2026 renewal has been offered at a total annual premium of $141,857. Now, it is important to note that of that premium, $17,828 was directly generated by the recent addition of scheduled bridge coverage up to full replacement cost for the bridges. You'll remember that prior to the scheduling of bridges, coverage was limited to $50,000 per bridge. So there was a pretty significant gap in coverage there. I believe our highest value bridge on the schedule is over $3 million. So we now have coverage for up to full replacement cost for that full schedule of bridges. The total insured bridge value now on the policy is sitting at $11,695,900. So we're charged an additional premium of $17,828, but we are receiving the additional almost $11.7 million in property coverage for bridges there. Now, speaking to the increase over last term, I will omit that $17,828 from the comparison just because that is a new coverage. If we omit that, the premium increase over the prior term was actually sitting at $7,315 or 6.3%. We had requested a midterm premium indication at the request of staff during the last policy period. At that time, we were given a premium indication of anywhere between 5 to 10%. So I'm happy to be presenting terms on the lower end of that projection this evening. We are beginning to see a lot of signs of stabilization and softening in the insurance marketplace following a period of hard market conditions, which lasted about 5 years. We're coming out of that. Municipal insurers are a little bit slower to see those signs of softening, but I do genuinely believe that this renewal offer is reflective of that softening insurance market and to your insurer's commitment to a long-standing partnership with the municipality. If you're perusing through the renewal report, page 16 provides a cost analysis, which is just a really nice one-pager which lays out the total premium increase by each individual line of coverage. So once you look at that cost analysis, you'll note that the majority of the increase fell under the property portion of the program, which increased by a total of $3,346 if we don't include the additional $17,828 for the bridge coverage. The increase in property premium was largely a result of a 10% rate increase, which was applied due to loss ratios. Our property loss ratio is currently sitting at 122.9%. There was also a 5% inflationary factor applied. I'm sure you're all well aware that inflationary increases are well on the rise. The cost of construction supplies are skyrocketing. So we're still really facing some of those inflation issues when it comes to pricing property premiums. So that 5% inflationary factor was applied. So it's important to note that the total insured value of all property was increased by a total of $477,900. It's now sitting at, not including bridge coverage, our total amount of insurance is $14,761,392 on the property policy. If we include bridge coverage, total amount of insurance, $26,457,292 of property. The balance of that increase fell mainly under the liability portions, our casualty and excess liability. Those increased by a total of $3,107 from the prior term. This is due to a combination of factors, including, again, the standard rate increase, just due to individual loss ratios. The loss ratios are much more favorable on the liability side than the property. But although we have entered that soft insurance market and we do have favorable loss ratios on the liability side, municipalities, their insurers, continue to face unique challenges, especially in the liability space, just due to a number of factors, long tail nature of liability claims, joint and several liability. We have a changing legal landscape. We're becoming much more litigious like our neighbors. We're seeing an increase in litigation and an increase in those class action lawsuits as well. So as you can understand, municipal insurers have quite a challenge when it comes to pricing their liability premiums to remain in a position of profitability. Included with the renewal report as well are your schedules. We have additional insured schedules as well as property and auto schedules. I'm not sure if you've all had a chance to review all the schedules. Upon a review of the schedules with staff, there were some questions raised around the excluded items listed on the schedules. In particular, the two churches, the St. Stephen and the Old Hemlock School, those had been excluded from the policy back in 2017 due to the condition of the buildings at that time. We're currently working with your staff and your insurer to gather information on recent repairs and renovations at both those locations, so we can get costing on reinstating coverage for those two locations as well. There are some pieces of equipment listed on the excluded item schedule which have actually been deleted from the policy and are showing there in error. So we're in the process of just some housekeeping and cleaning up with your insurer there. We will have revised schedules available for you as soon as possible. Outside of the Intact program, the IPE program, sorry, we've also provided a quote for cyber insurance. I don't think it's really a secret anymore that municipalities are a really desirable target for cyber criminals. We're seeing cyber attacks increasing in frequency and severity across the board, but for municipalities as well. And cyber criminals are becoming really sophisticated in their hacking strategies. And cyber attacks, as you can guess, they not only disrupt essential services, but it also comes with a risk of compromising sensitive data. So we always try to encourage all of our clients, but especially municipal clients, to add cyber insurance to your portfolio to address that gap in coverage. A cyber insurance policy will cover both first and third party losses after a cyber attack event. It also includes access to expert support during incidents. So your cyber insurance policy will come with a breach response app and a breach response team available to you 24/7 in the event of a cyber occurrence. So if you have any kind of a hack cyber event, that they have a 1-800 number, you get on the phone with them. They are basically a team of good guy hackers. I affectionately refer to them as the group of nerds. These guys are available to you to get on the phone. They'll help you contain a cyber attack. They will negotiate with cyber criminals when there's a ransom demand. And they also, their app also includes a lot of monitoring for your system. We did obtain quotes for $1, $2, and $3 million. After a review with staff, it was requested that we also obtain a quote for $5 million. We don't have that available yet. We have requested it. We're also working with staff to gather some additional information on the robust IT infrastructure that you currently have in place, in hopes of maybe securing some additional savings to the quotes that have already been provided. With that being said, cyber insurance remains a really challenging area for municipalities and municipal insurers. I believe there's currently only one provider of cyber insurance in the marketplace right now. We saw a lot of them come on board when cyber insurance was introduced, and then they all kind of pulled out of providing for municipalities. CFC is the company that provided the quotes we've presented. CFC is committed to this segment. They have said they're not going to pull out. They're committed to continuing to provide insurance for municipalities. However, because it's such a tricky class of business, it does make it challenging when it comes to negotiating competitive premiums and requesting higher limits. So I can't make any promises as to which direction that's going to go, but we will always do our best as usual. And as soon as we have any updates from CFC on revised pricing, any additional infrastructure which may lead to opportunities for savings, we will let staff know immediately. Finally, I always just like to conclude my presentations with a really quick little blurb about risk management. Your insurer provides a wealth of risk management services complementary to your insurance coverage as part of your program. We always encourage you to lean on both myself and your insurance provider for support, fine-tuning your risk management strategies. If you take a look at the renewal report, there's a lot more information available in there on some of those services. I'm, of course, always available to provide more information or facilitate any of those services through IPE. I believe it was today IPE's road specialist was already on site with you today helping with a road risk assessment. So you're already taking advantage of some of those services, which is wonderful. Just like to remind you, we don't have too much control when it comes to municipal insurance premiums. The best way we can control that is, of course, keeping our losses down through risk management. So I have a certificate in municipal risk management through Conestoga College. There are tons of risk management specialists available at IPE. Lean on us wherever possible. We don't want to just be a once a year show up and give you a bill. We're your partners in risk management. And so we just want to encourage you to lean on us wherever possible. I believe that's it for me. That was probably a bit of information overload. So I'll open it up to any questions, any for further clarification at this time.
Great, thank you very much. Any questions from council? Councilor Beckman?
Thank you for your presentation. Page 17, it says changes to your insurance program, and it refers to the Community Safety and Policing Act 2019 CSPA Ontario changes. So previously, did we have some type of insurance for the Community Policing and Safety Committee that was in place?
So this change in legislation, prior to this change in legislation, what we saw was OPP police detachment boards were typically covered automatically under the wordings of a municipal insurance program. That is no longer the case following this change in legislation. So what this means is any police servicing boards, any OPP detachment boards, now must seek insurance coverage separately. They are regarded as their own separate entity.
Okay, thank you.
So
in regards to Exhibit A, and that's referring to the bridges, so who's responsible for ensuring the information in this Exhibit A? Is the information within it is accurate? Is that township staff or...
Sorry, are you referring to the underwriting information which would have been used to determine replacement values?
Yes, like there's some information that is not accurate, like Stewart Park Bridge, it refers to as 9 meters long. It's 9 meters in width, but it's 22 meters long.
Okay, I'll make a note of that and bring that back to the insurer. All underwriting construction information provided was by staff. However, a lot of this information was taken from previous engineering reports. It could be that underwriting was looking at old information. What I'll do is I'll follow up with staff tomorrow morning to go through that list and take a look at any of that construction information provided and flag anything that looks inaccurate. And then we can bring that back to the insurer, or we can gather additional underwriting details if necessary, so we can make sure that's accurate.
And then as well, there's one other, it's the In-Holmes Bridge. It refers to it as a traverse laminated timber deck. It's a concrete deck with asphalt surfacing. So it's, so it's In-Holmes Bridge.
Okay.
And Stewart Park Bridge.
In-Holmes and Stewart Park. Okay. Thank you for that. I'll make sure to follow up with staff, and we'll bring that back to the insurer and have that corrected.
Great, thank you.
Okay, other questions from council? Councilor Kagan?
I'm just wondering about it's great that there's an opportunity for cyber attack coverage. Have you been in consultation with our IT provider regarding what's being offered here, and any comments they may have in regards to this policy?
Yes, we've been provided a form from Samantha, and our IT consultant is currently completing it. And once it's completed, I will send it back to her.
Okay, great, thank you.
And then once we receive the additional quotes for cyber, I will just suggest perhaps maybe another meeting. I think cyber insurance is kind of its own beast, and it's quite complex. And perhaps maybe a meeting with your IT provider, and then we can present the information to council in partnership with your IT if that's something council's interested in. I find I've had to get a lot of training on cyber insurance because it was kind of a different language to me once I started getting to know the product. It's quite complex, so certainly we're open to work with IT staff in gathering all the necessary information and discussing the coverages provided.
So I'm just wondering, in regards to the bridges, once again, the replacement costs, just sort of question some of these insurance limits and the replacement costs. Would we require, when they do the bridge assessments and in municipal infrastructure, that we question their how they came to these numbers, because when you look at a bridge such as In Holmes Bridge compared to Herdville Bridge or any of these other bridges, they're all in the same replacement cost range, but with, I don't know, if it just doesn't seem that it's where it should be at this day and age. So is that something we should that we should review with the engineer when they're doing the bridge assessments?
Certainly. So your insurer will have their own replacement cost evaluators that they use. They will always provide those values with the caveat that ultimately it is the policyholder's responsibility to determine insurance values. So certainly we always encourage you to obtain any appraisals, engineering reports possible to ensure that we have accurate replacement costs, especially on things like bridges, where they're a little more complex when it comes to calculating a rebuild cost.
Okay, thank you.
I think one of the problems there is that Herdville, for instance, is listed at 1.6. Obviously, if we went to replace it, it would be over 3 million. But I think it's sort of replacement value as is, and that's where you run into that problem. You can't say that you know, they're going to insure for 3 million when it's only worth 1.6 as it stands now. I think that's a complicating factor. So it's replacement, yes, but just replacement as is.
Replacement with like or similar quality material, yes.
Right. Lost the link.
Okay.
I had a question as well for the automobile insurance, and I noticed for the township automobile, whether it be owned or leased, this question has always come up over the years. If one of us, for instance, was traveling to a conference and there was an accident, is our own insurance, first of all, responsible, and then, because it's not a township-owned vehicle, maybe the township, because of our position, covers us, but is it our own insurance that clicks in, first of all, rather than the township insurance?
Yes, that's correct. So should you be involved in an accident while driving your own vehicle on municipal business, your auto insurer would be primary. However, in the event that your auto insurer, your personal auto insurance limits are exhausted, which obviously there's potential if the claimant is aware that you were on municipal business, personal injury lawyers see deep pockets, all of a sudden our settlement demands are going up. We have opportunity under the policy for, the coverage is called non-owned auto liabilities. Those limits are provided over and above your personal auto limits in the event that your personal auto limits are exhausted.
Okay, so I guess to put everybody on alert that we're driving township vehicles from now on. another question, I just thought of this. We have a number of artifacts, and I don't know whether it's in the policy or not, in the Heritage Room or the museum. Would those be covered under any policy of insurance? Those are loaned by individuals in the township, and of course they can take them back at any time too. Do we have coverage, insurance coverage, for those artifacts that are in the Heritage Room?
There is coverage for fine arts under the extension of coverage. However, if the artifacts are not owned by the municipality, is there an agreement in place that stipulates the municipality's responsibilities while these items are in your care, custody, and control? Or is it kind of just a handshake deal?
It goes back a few years, but probably a handshake. Maybe Councillor Kekkonen knows more.
Well, there is a form that whoever's making the donations, that they fill out what it is they're donating, and I just can't remember if there was any criteria on there of the responsibilities of the municipality. I don't believe there is.
Okay, that's fine. I will just, because we are referring to fine arts, which are excluded under a standard property wording, they're added back into the municipal insurance program through an extension of coverage. I just don't want to lie to you, so leave that with me. I want to run that by the insurer, and what I'll do is I'll have them provide us with their risk management commentary on best practices, they'll likely have some language that they recommend you use in an agreement with anyone who's donating artifacts to be displayed, which will basically just tell you, waive the municipality's responsibility. However, I will check if there's opportunity for coverage for artifacts and fine arts not belonging to the municipality, but in your care, custody, and control. And I will let you know what the insurer says about that. I'll make sure I advise staff.
That's great, thank you. And we could probably forward the form that the that's filled out when a donation of an artifact is made to the township.
So if you could, certainly, yes. And then we'll pass that on as well. And that goes for really any agreements, any contracts. Your insurer is also available to provide contract and agreement reviews at any time. So please feel free to send any of those my way. We'll send those over to the insurer and send them back with risk management commentary.
That's great. We could maybe do that with the tower installation that we're doing. If Intact is aware of the new communication tower that's being installed?
I believe we are. I deal with a lot of municipalities every day, but I believe that does ring a bell. I think we have been advised of that.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions from council? Just on procedural, we don't want to go through a situation that the previous council did with the reference to a boat launch and a possible closing with Intact Insurance. The contact for the township is the township, not an individual. And I know we ran into that problem with the previous council. They wouldn't release information, the insurance company, to certain individuals, other than the person whose name it was under, and that happened to be the CAO. So any future correspondence would be to the municipality in care of, so that we don't run into that situation again where the information that should have been available to various council members was not available because it went to an individual. And they wouldn't speak to anybody else but that person. So I'm not sure how that works with the procedure, and I know you're sort of a subsidiary of Intact, but and I noticed his name is on here too, and I think he was the one that was contacted by the previous council. He wouldn't release information to council. So just again, for a procedure, how it's done, and so it doesn't come to an individual's name, that it comes to the township in care of. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Certainly, I will just ask if possible, if I could receive an email with that request, just so that I can note our file and have that in writing.
Making a note of it here, so that sounds good. As long as council is agreeable. It was a previous council that ran into the problems, but we just don't want to avoid those.
Yeah, I think that's good housekeeping to ensure that the policyholder receives any risk management reports or any information that's relevant to the entire council, and that information is not withheld from council because the correspondence of that risk management report maybe only went to one individual. So I think this is good housekeeping to ensure that doesn't take place in the future.
Okay, any further questions from council? Okay, well, thanks very much. And I think we've gone over the 10 minutes, but we certainly appreciate your detailed explanation. And I know you're in touch with staff on a regular basis, so I'm sure all areas are covered. So thanks again for your presentation.
Thank you very much. I wish you all a great evening.
Okay, thank you.
You too.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We have resolution 25-379, moved by Councillor Cuckinan, second by Councillor Ryland. Be resolved that the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar has hereby received the deputation from Samantha Elliott on the 2025 Municipal Insurance Program Renewal Report for the policy term September the 19th, 2025 to September the 19th, 2026 for information purposes, and further direct the Treasury to accept the policy renewal with Intact public entities. Discussion? Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Okay, next on the agenda, 11.
two parents for Prairie Sound, and this is where I'm declaring a potential conflict, so the Deputy Mayor, Councilor Keckner, will take over and run the meeting from here on.
Maybe we'll do the presentation first, and then we'll read the resolution.
Okay. So I'd like to welcome Amy Black and Shane Reynolds, representing the Parents for Prairie Sound Call to Action, support for Prairie Sound students and families. And you can make your deputation.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Thank you for allowing us the opportunity to speak tonight. My name is Amy Black, and this is Shane Reynolds, and we are two-thirds of Parents for Prairie Sound. Vicki Christie couldn't be here tonight. As you probably already know, since August 11th, we've been working tirelessly to bring attention to the education crisis in our region. We've written lots of letters, gathered petition signatures, deputations, we've gained provincial and CTV national media coverage, and received correspondence from both our local MPP, Greg Smith, and the Minister of Education, Paul Calandra. But today we are here to tell you that we have taken this as far as we can on our own, and we are reaching out to our local municipalities for help. Parents are at the end of the road. We are asking the municipalities to band together and show a united front and stand with us to request the answers and accountability from the Near North District School Board. So this entire situation was avoidable. The entire crisis, the delayed opening of the JK to 12 super school, which has forced our 9 to 12 students to remote online learning, was avoidable. It's no secret that municipalities in the West Prairie Sound region have opposed the super school model since the beginning, dating back as far as 2013. Municipalities passed resolutions, deputations were made, and warnings were issued repeatedly that this project would not meet the needs of our growing population. And here we are 15 years later with a $60 million project, two plus years in construction, and it's still incomplete. Students beginning the year online with still no clear answers in sight. It's not just mismanagement, it's actually negligence. The board answers to the ministry answers to Premier Doug Ford, and yet, where is the accountability? The silence has been deafening. Families have been left with vague statements and mixed messaging. Something simple, even as we're hopeful students will be back in the classroom in a month, or, you know, by Christmas. We have heard absolutely nothing. It would at least allow parents and students to prepare. Instead, we are left with silence, confusion, and lots of rumors. I'm going to ask Shane to speak on behalf of about McDougal Public School and the benefits of keeping that open. It is a safe, feasible, and reliable asset that we already have. And before the doors of the new school even open, we are 300 seats short to accommodate current enrollment.
So right now, just some basic research, I've projected 1% to 3% growth, depending on what type of township you're in the surrounding area. Also, other developments that come in with a new 300-home development in the Seguin Township that boosts that economic and our population up that much more year by year. So we project that over 5-10 years. If we decide to close McDougal School, we're going to be put in a position that we're going to have to build another $58 million school based on our projections. So basic math that I did is roughly 17,900 people in our surrounding townships, just not the town itself. I have to figure that out. So I'll save that 17,900 population growth, 500 of them could possibly be students, which then that's a full enrollment at a school like McDougal or a brand new school forcing their hand to spend another $58 million plus inflation. So they currently have an asset that's working. It's working JK to grade 6. If they keep that asset, it alleviates the pressure off that new school, which allows the community to essentially grow in every community. Right now, it's pretty hard to bring your child to an education system that everybody's being put into a portable because we didn't forecast growth in our area. As you all know, everybody's been opposed to this school right from the start. There's facts that show that we're over capacity already. They've already installed hex pods, which wasn't a part of the original plan. So there's huge implementations for them not foreseeing the future. This isn't just an education problem. This is also a development and economic problem. So I think it's best that we really have the townships come together as one solid voice, voicing that we need to look for the future. We need to think for the school systems that we need to make sure they're in place for our economy and our municipalities to grow in the near future, because it is coming, and we're growing exponentially right now. And if we do not plan for the future, then we're going to be in a position that we're going to have to spend another $58 plus million on a school.
Thank you. So we are asking, we've been asking, so we're asking for your help to request from the school board and perhaps even get Minister Calandra, Premier Doug Ford, and MPP Graham Smith all together in one room, as well as all the local municipalities to have a meeting. We need to know clear online learning timelines. There is a full public there's a full investigation that Minister Calandra has launched into the board and trustees. Whether or not that will be fully disclosed to the public, we don't know. And we are looking for real solutions for enrollment capacity. It's no longer just a board failure, it is a provincial failure. Our children's education and well-being must come first, and we need your leadership to help hold the board, the ministry, and the province accountable. Are there any questions?
I can just make a comment. This has been going on for decades over McDougall School. I think I had to go about 25, 30 years ago to a meeting at McDougall School, and the parents were saying, no, we want it left open. And at that time, it did work. They did listen at that time. Unfortunately, because I've been watching what's been happening here, it just seems like, yeah, there's been a lack of listening to the parents and the public on McDougall School especially, because it's a wonderful piece of property. You know, it seems like a no-brainer to keep it functioning. It'll need upgrades as we go along, but it'd be a lot cheaper than having to do a total rebuild in the future. So I certainly appreciate you following up on this and continuing with the efforts to keep McDougall School open. And like I said, it's almost a positive that the new school construction is under constructed. You know, not hold enough students. I think that's going to force their hand and to have to leave McDougall School open going forward.
But we need your help. To Ian's point, we push it as far as we can with media attention. There's been groups before us that have done exactly what we've done. 3 weeks before school, three parents banded together, asked same questions like, are we going to be in the old school or the new school? What's your contingency plan? Again, I get to deal with project management for my living, so I understand how to build a project out. Contingency, redundancy is built into that. So if they did plan on reinstating a high school that they did temporary, I guess, deconstruct or demo the one-third of it, no more culinary classes, like no more tech classes, did they create an agreement with Canadore College, which is up the road, to provide these classes to those students? Or do we have to just like accept the subpar education? Again, there's no layers within that. The contingency plan wasn't displayed to any students or parents. So we were all asking the same question all through the summer, and the board has been reluctant to talk to us at all. There's been 7 letters sent to them asking the same questions. We've now gone to one level above with the Ministry of Education, but we still haven't really been given an answer. My kids ask me all the time, where's the light at the end of the tunnel? Most kids got to get their picture taken beside their siblings in their new outfit. My kids were on the protest line asking, when am I going to get into a classroom? So I have a grade 12 that's looking to graduate and do a trade. His ability to do any type of schooling is now gone, so he's into a theory part. My daughter, she's going into grade 9. This is a huge year for her. Again, no answers to what she's doing for the future, what courses are going to be involved. It's all online. So right now, like parents, we've made concessions in life. I've turned my basement into basically a classroom atmosphere. I have basically 3 to 5 kids that are going to show up every day. They have decent internet connection, and at least they can be amongst their peers. And I really think, to Amy's point, this all could have been avoided. There's been a huge support from the community, McKellar being one of them, that have opened their doors to students. So why didn't our school board or Ministry of Education work with our surrounding community spaces? And that's the biggest thing, is that, again, this could have been avoidable. 3 weeks out, we were demanding, please make sure all these things were done. We knew that the new school wasn't ready to go. We knew the old school had some issues. And why didn't you fix them? Why didn't you tell us, like, at the end of the school year, our target was to get into the school by mid-August for occupancy. Again, targets, benchmarks by April, May to have certain utilities done, finals by July, but there was nothing written out to the public, so we couldn't hold them accountable. And then from my understanding, the ministry doesn't even know what their plan was. And to this day, as far as Mr. Calandra's statement, was that he didn't approve of their contingency plan. So then where was the follow-up? You know, like, where does this fall back to? It's the community that's really going to hurt itself. We can't continue to grow. Like, I deal with growth and stuff, and it's coming. It's we're growing astronomically compared to the Muskoka region. Muskoka region is built. It's coming this way faster than ever. And if we can't have an education system to hold these people, they're not going to come to our community.
Well, we really appreciate the advocacy and the efforts that your group has put forward. It
should never be that way. There should always be a proactive, those who are administering in administration of anything, to be thinking about these things proactively. You know, you look at the impacts, long-term impacts, you know, this is going to have on students and families in the Parry Sound area. It's just unacceptable. You know, and particularly when you look at the financial portion of what municipalities pay, McKellar Township, a small municipality, collects $1.1.2 million for education that's sent to the province. So, you know, there's a financial aspect, but then there's, you know, this huge, you know, impact on students' lives and future careers and on Ontario as well. Like, you know, that impacts the larger picture of, you know, how the outcomes are of these students over the long term. So, you know, we really appreciate your efforts. Unfortunately, it should never have come to this point. And particularly, as you highlight, probably over the last 10 years, these concerns were raised. And, you know, there was never really, you know, people were never felt fulfilled that their answers were being answered by those that are responsible. So, I'm sure McKellar Council feels strongly about supporting any efforts, and we do have a motion to go to the table here, and hopefully it has some type of impact in your efforts and in support of the students going forward, because once again, it's absolutely unacceptable that there hasn't been accountability and that there hasn't been leaders in the province stepping up and you know, really fighting this fight for the students and for the parents.
Yeah, I mean, we were just at Seaman Township. They basically agreed to the same terms you did, and we came back and echoed the same thing, is that we need the municipalities to be the biggest voice right now, because we're just three parents with a bunch of followers on Facebook. We've got media attention on us now. We really need the municipalities and our First Nations communities to band together as one voice, as Parry Sound, because I really think that the spotlight's on us now, and we have to take this opportunity to both push for education and develop ministers to come to the table to plan for Parry Sound, because we're growing, and they have to give us a little bit of a say here.
Councillor
Zulak? Yeah, I'd just like to say that the board should be made accountable for what they have done. I mean, they knew long before this that the school was not going to be ready to be open, and they never relayed that to the parents or the trustee. No.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that is, it's broken. The system there is broken, and the minister, I'm sure, was he given the truth of what that the school will be ready? Who knows? But he needs to be accountable for the board.
Yeah, he's their boss,
there,
right?
That's right.
So, yeah.
So there, we definitely need to do something about that. Somebody has to, you know, pay, like you're saying, these are our children's livelihoods, our future. They're going to be running things, you know?
Yeah.
And it's pretty sad. It's pretty sad that it has come to this, when I know every time I went past that high school, I thought, it's never going to be ready by September. It won't be ready by Christmas. So
yeah.
They knew well ahead of time. And even if they... The part that they decommissioned of the old high school, now they have to imagine, have an engineer go in there and make sure that there's the water, the asbestos, the electrical, that it's not hazardous to any of the kids when they happen to go back, if it may be next year. Who knows?
We honestly have to wonder, if we didn't start speaking up, if they would have put them in an unsafe building.
Yep.
or what would have happened, because really they had... They led us to believe at this point there was no intention of disclosing anything until we started speaking up.
And that's insane. It's absolutely insane.
But just make it known that our local trustee has made it well known that we needed to keep McDougall open. He's been advocating for a long time to keep that open, and unfortunately he's one of a few trustees and he gets outvoted all the time.
Oh.
So again, we need to make sure that we voice that our trustee's always been there to voice the concerns about closing McDougall and then overcapacitating the new school, which is a shame because he is our voice.
Yeah.
And you never listen to him. And as you noticed recently, there's been a school board trustee step down, and she's recently done a CBC news interview to explain why, which is concerning. So.
Any further questions or comments from members of council? Councillor Ryan?
In particular, because it's relative to my role when I worked, I was entitled this, but I was effectively a project manager. It seems to me from the things I read, including from your Facebook pages and other locations, that if there is or has been a project manager or don't even have a school we can send, you know, high school students to.
Can't even project a date.
Sorry?
Can't even project a date when we'll be into the new school.
Yeah.
Like, as a project manager, we forecast things like that. We have plans built into it and can't even foresee that maybe we'll get you in January. That's our plan.
Yeah.
And these are all of our targets. We're going to meet nothing.
People have to be accountable for this. I mean, they've messed this up. I was going to use a lot of nastier words. Big time, and they need to be held accountable for it. They were responsible.
Yeah.
Where the hell is it?
They seem to be targeting the trustees, which everybody should be investigated, but
yeah.
The responsibility, as far as we can see, really lies with senior administration.
Yeah.
They're the ones withholding information.
Yeah.
But we really need the townships to push together. We really need to band together. If there's anything we can do behind the scenes to organize the townships meetings between townships, we're all about trying to help out, trying to get that one solid voice going forward. We'll be at the table to help you, but we really need the municipalities to take this over. You're the bigger voice here.
Is there any element of this that the school board is not physically in or near Parry Sound? In other words, in North Bay versus here?
Funny you mention that. I just had a student meet me, and they have their whole curriculum, including their extra activities, planned out. And my child doesn't even have an idea of what link to go to in their Teams meeting yet.
We have posed that question. What kind of funding is allocated to North Bay, Onegwa, and other schools within the district versus Parry Sound, but we don't know.
I mean, it's appalling to happen anywhere.
Yeah.
It's personal here because...
Yeah. We're a first world country, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's, yeah.
But to your point about education and the cost of it, we now have parents bearing the cost of buying new tech for their children. The school board is handing out tech devices. We have heard back from many parents that they haven't gotten notification if they are going to be able to get one. Some grassroots donations from around the surrounding areas have been giving us some new laptops to hand out to some families that are in dire need of some tech to at least get their kid online. They may not be able to provide internet, but at least they can provide a device that they can get somewhere like a township to get free internet so that they can actually get online with their peers as well. But that's grassroots donations. That's not the school going out of their way. So.
Wow, it's incredibly disturbing that, you know, they're the ones that mishandled this, and they don't even have a contingency plan to the nuts and bolts of, you know, what needs to be done immediately, you know, to meet the needs of students and families. So we do have a motion to go to the table, but if after when you receive the motion, if there's any other things that you feel that, you know, when the other municipalities have passed the motion as well, that when you see the support, if there's any things that you see that are the next steps, just stay in communication with the township, and there does definitely has to be accountability. You know, that's why they're there. They're supposed to be leaders to make sure that this stuff doesn't happen. And when they don't, well, then that's when they get called to explain and make sure. It's you know, it's so unfortunate that how do you correct this? You can't. You know, like it's so damaging, you know, to the kids' education. So there has to be some serious consequences.
But where's the light at the end of the tunnel? We literally don't know. What's the answer? Are we going back to the old school and we're going to be in the classroom there? Or are we going to the new school? And what's the projected date? Honestly, you have to be able to give kids some certainty. Online learning it's not fun, especially with different sciences and different backgrounds. Like these children that are in the grade 12, like we literally just cut their ability to go to post-secondary school out. I learned of a story that a girl saved up for a camera, for a lens, $9,000. She worked all summer to buy a camera and a lens to go to George Brown College. But unfortunately, that course through the high school is no longer available. So now she has to wait a full year now to go back to college.
Oh, my goodness.
That's terrible for anybody else. Like, that's subpar education.
And the special needs programs, all that, like, nothing's been addressed.
Wow.
There's a lot. There's a lot of moving parts. Like, we're only really scratching the surface, and a lot of parents have been sharing their stories anonymously and publicly online on our Facebook page. But
check out our Facebook page.
It's just
Parents with Parry Sound, and every time we post something or get information, we want to make sure it's transparent, because that's the lacking part in this whole equation. So parents can see bus schedules, the links to go to different things. This wasn't a smear campaign. This was just a bunch of parents just trying to figure out how to get their kids into the classroom safely. So.
Yeah, so thanks again for your efforts, and like you said, if there's anything we can do to help going forward, we'd be more than willing. It's unacceptable, so
Thank you. So I'll put the motion to the table. And resolution number 25380, moved by Councillor Haskam, seconded by Councillor Zulak. Whereas the delayed opening of the J-12 Super School in Curry Sound at the start of the 2025 school year has raised serious concerns regarding governance, transparency, and communication. And whereas the Near North District School Board trustees have requested that the Minister of Education immediately investigate the governance and administrative practices of the Near North District School Board, and whereas Council has received a deputation from Amy Black and Shane Reynolds from Parents for Perry Sound, now therefore be it resolved that the Council of the Township of McKellar does hereby support the Near North District School Board trustees' resolution calling for ministry intervention and investigation, and further that the municipality send a letter to the Minister of Education urging urgent action, citing the local impacts of failed governance, lack of communication, and the breakdown of contingency plans, and further that the municipality advocate for transparency, accountability, and public communication from both the Near North District School Board and the Ministry, and further that the municipality participate in any meetings, calls, or consultations with the Ministry, Near North District School Board, and affected municipalities to ensure local concerns are presented. Any discussion?
So the Near North District School Board and the Near North District School Board trustees are two separate, right? Just so I get that straight in my head. So the trustees are wanting the board investigated.
Four of the three, and since then one has stepped down, one has publicly apologized, and the other one has been sacked.
Has been sacked?
Silence.
Oh, silence. I said sacked. Okay. Yeah, and who's the copies to? Sorry, Mike.
So it's...
we'll provide the Minister of Education with a letter accompanying the resolution.
And what about Premier Ford?
We can add him as well.
Yes.
And the other municipalities?
Do you want us to involve in this or correspond with anybody else we haven't mentioned?
You could copy Graydon Smith, just because he's been copied on all of our correspondence.
Yep.
And townships.
Local townships.
Local townships as well, just so they see that you're supporting us. We've been to pretty much every municipality, except a couple of
two more
this week.
Yes.
So. We're just trying to show one united voice. I really think if we can get the communities together, we can make a solid decision and a solid change.
We hope so. Any further discussion? Those in favor? And those opposed? None? Carried.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate your time.
Well, we thank you for your time and efforts. We just, once again, it's unfortunate that you've had to exert this kind of time and energy and effort when something should always, they should never come to this point. So, and all the students that are suffering because of it as well. So thank you for your efforts.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Have a good evening.
Good night.
It almost makes me think that we should have some kind of a motion that board has to step down and we wouldn't be appointed.
It's nice to know that.
Yeah, so we can see how things, the
principal's office is sitting out there.
We can bring another motion to the table if you would like, or for the next meeting.
What does everybody else think?
So we can think about it and write it out.
Well, to me, they haven't been accountable, and they should have been accountable to ask the questions to the project manager, right? As to what was going on and what's happening, what the delays are, and they should have known that this was happening, and they didn't do anything.
Yeah, they said they have two more municipalities to visit, so maybe once everyone has a deputation. and there's no action, we can bring another forward.
Let's go like this, Dave.
Okay, so we have Mayor David Moore back, and he'll take the chair.
Thank you. We had moved the agenda around a little bit, so we had 17.1. We have our CBO, Chris Bordelot, here to speak to his report, whether he wants to say anything more than what's in the report, but certainly can. We appreciate the detail that's in there. I think justification certainly for this slight increase in its cost or the fees. So it's all yours, Chris. Do you want to explain it? Or?
Okay. Well, as the report states, it was just to provide a little bit of additional information to supplement the prior report from the last council meeting. And showing it still has the fee schedule, but showing, as I mentioned before, the comparisons of other municipalities and the prior 7 years, which has been since the last change in fees for the building department. So the report was just kind of summarizing those items, and happy to answer any questions if council or mayor have any questions.
Okay, we'll go back to council if you have any particular questions.
I do, if I can find it. No, it's not this one.
Okay, while you're looking for that, I do appreciate the comparison to the other townships. I think that since we're all in this together in a sense, I think that's good, even though it might not be legislated as such that we compare it to the others. I think you've shown certainly that, except for that 1 year, it certainly hasn't been revenue neutral, that there is an opportunity here to bring the fees more in line with what's expected for this time and certainly and in this area.
No.
No?
No, I'm good. It's another one I'm thinking of.
Any questions from council?
I certainly appreciate the analysis that's done, basically a profit loss without calling it that. Mm-hmm. And it's a good way, I think, to look at this to make sure at the least that we recover our costs. And so I appreciate the sheer amount of information gathered and presented here. So.
Appreciate that. The intent, you know, as much as it does say revenue neutral, it's impossible to do. To have that exact number every year. So it's not necessarily that it's revenue neutral, but not to exceed the anticipated costs. But it doesn't mean that you can't exceed the anticipated costs of operation. It's just that years that it does exceed it is put into a reserve to cover those older years, and that's what's happened over the last 7 years.
And in a nutshell, I would describe that this should be the role of council or of all of us to look at this not just for your department but for other things too, to make sure that we become or that we are economically viable, but you know, that we look at the equations here to figure out what needs to be done. So it's a great report. So
Councilor Peckham,
just a comment as well. Thank you, really appreciate that the effort they put into this. Definitely helps council to be able to justify any decisions we're making. So thank you very much. Excellent report. Appreciate it.
Okay, last call for questions in council.
Easy.
We have resolution 25-381, moved by Councilor Peckman, second by Councilor Ryland. The result of the council of the corporation of the Township of McCullough has hereby received report BD-25-02. Rationale for proposed building permit fee changes from Chief Building Official Chris Bordelot for information purposes. Call the question. All those in favor? Not opposed? Carried. Thank you very much for coming out.
Thanks, Chris.
Hanging around. I don't know whether you're involved in the procurement bylaw discussion that's coming up, but no.
You might.
moved by Councilor Zulak, second by Councilor Haskin. Be it resolved the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar is hereby moved into Committee of the Whole at 7:30 p.m. to discuss the or present the draft procurement bylaw for Council's review and discussion. Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed. Carried. Okay, a lot of detail here. I don't know where you want to start. Maybe with an again executive summary rather than going through line by line, but
So the township's procurement bylaw was last updated in 2019. Since 2019, we've seen costs increase. So we made a couple changes, proposed amendments to the procurement bylaw, so the council can review them and provide feedback to staff tonight. So we're increasing the financial ranges for initial quotes and tenders reflecting the rise in cost of goods and services since 2019. Six of the seven municipalities were also asked to provide their procurement bylaws so staff can see where we fall within our neighboring municipalities. Secondly, allowing the township to participate in cooperative purchasing groups such as Canadian Procurement Canada, where we had a deputation a couple meetings ago. And lastly, to introduce the options for vendors to submit tenders electronically. We have had this request by many vendors over the years, so we're trying to provide them with an option, not necessarily saying that every tender would be able to be submitted electronically, but some more for expressions of interest and things that aren't either a multi-million dollar capital project, something small could be submitted via electronic means.
Okay, great. Thank you. Since you ended on that, I just looking at the procedure for an electronic, I'm a little confused on what's saying there. It's kept under secure lock and key sort of thing when they come in, but there's no public opening as we do with the paper. That's just done by staff, is it, at some point?
Yeah, so if that were to be approved, we would connect with our IT support and get a exclusive email address just for tender submission. So it'd be something like tenders@mckellar.ca. That email address would be only accessible by myself and the deputy clerk. And at the time of a tender opening, then we would log into that email and open them all with the timestamp. So we couldn't go in ahead and look to see what was submitted. And then with the timestamp, we can also tell if something was submitted not within the closing date. So those we would just go in and delete.
Now, those who put in bids, they usually come, I mean, if they're interested in actually here for the opening, that wouldn't happen with the electronic?
Well, it again, can be up to the discretion of council. If you're still wanting to have public tender openings for electronic submissions, we can do that. It's easy enough to bring a laptop into the council chambers. We would log into that procurement email and then have the tender opening form as we normally do for opening paper packages, so that can be facilitated as well.
Yeah, I guess it is a change certainly for council to what we're used to, and I'm not sure how they feel about it, but the whole idea that everything is kept under confidentiality, secrecy, until they're all opened at one time. It's the same sort of thing. There's no real guarantee. I mean, you're saying it's timestamped when you actually enter into that site, so we would know. I mean, it would show up when you actually went in. And
no, the timestamp is only for when the email was sent into the inbox. So
right.
We wouldn't have it as another mailbox in our inbox, so we wouldn't be getting this tenders email with our regular mail. It'd be something that we'd specifically have to log into at the opening.
Okay, that's what I wondered, because there's no indication, you know, present company excluded here, but there's no check, for instance, if somebody did look at a bid before all the bids were closed. I mean, is that a possibility for staff to do that?
If a member of council wanted to attend the bid opening, we could have that check, or the department head accompanying the tender could also be another check. Barry and I could maybe not check our own work, but we could have, say, the treasurer come in to ensure that we haven't looked at them prior to the closing date. We could have that check there.
I think that's a key, not looking at any of them prior to the closing date, because obviously if you've got the document and you're implementing it, putting it into the system, there's always a potential. And one of the things we try to watch certainly very closely is that no bidders are aware of another bid that exists. So we just have to make sure that safeguard is there. Mm-hmm. Councilor Zulak?
So whenever you go into that box, would it show? Like if you went in there, not saying that you, I'm saying this, if somebody went in there and deleted a bid, would it show that it was opened and somebody went in?
It would be in the deleted file. I don't know if you could delete it further from there, but that's something I could ask our IT provider. Yeah.
Just trying to make sure that there.
I don't
nothing.
Believe they can, well, I don't know, maybe there is a way that they can see when we've logged into this account. I can investigate that for sure.
Because that is the challenge, as you say, if you don't have an actual paper copy, there's no guarantee that all bids were received, sort of thing. You can't trace it back.
Unless it shows every time somebody logs
right.
in.
But I'm not sure
the
if
date. Yeah, I don't even know.
Well, if I have had an email account and deleted an email, there's still a record that it got there and got deleted. There's a permanent record on email. Right? I mean, emails were frequently, and I do mean frequently, a cause for dismissal from the bank because of misconduct that was evidenced by emails, and people that were a lot smarter than me tried to find ways to cover their tracks that they couldn't cover them, right? First of all, there's a server copy, too. I can delete it on here, but it doesn't get rid of the record, right? Now, whether somebody, my only concern about this would be would somebody would open it early and share that information illicitly, and I'm not accusing anybody of doing that. I'm just saying I don't exactly know how to control that, but I'm pretty sure that Near North would know how to do that. So
yes, or I could ask them if they have some sort of setup where the password changes every time,
yeah.
So maybe I would have to call them before an opening to get the
sure.
password. There may be some solution that way as
sure.
well.
If I did think about it today when I was reading this, but I really, it's been 10 years since I had to deal with any kind of issues like this, but I know like I said, deleting an email does not delete the email. It just deletes the appearance of it. The record is still there. And if you opened it even, there would be a record of that, right? Because my email is this email. You can tell if I've seen it or not, right? Just by if I clicked on it, right? So I think that we're okay. We just need to have, I think, a procedure of how exactly that works so that, council can agree to that. But and if Near North was to present a solution they thought was good, pretty sure I'd say, okay, let's do it. So,
Councilor Zulak?
So, I'm just wondering, is there any way that account could be locked and only open at a certain time, at a certain date?
That could be a possibility, so I'll ask Near North about that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Councilor Kagan?
So, this would be an option alongside having the regular tender submission?
Correct.
Now, looking at the actual amounts, it seems to me, now it's the previous council, I guess the amounts were increased. Was it the previous council or the one before? I don't know when, but it seemed to me that there were certain figures that were increased already, not that long ago. Am I incorrect in that? Or?
It was in the previous term council, the 2018 to 2022 term council.
So that's what I'd like to see is the paper trail here. If they were increased then, and now they're being increased again in short order, I'm just wondering why that's being done. And are we getting too large without council approval or being aware of the transactions that are taking place? Well, it makes me wonder, and again, as I said, present company excluded, but in the pool committee, West Perry Sound Recreation Cultural Center, they had a motion at the time when we were part of it that they could approve without coming back to the board. It was over $200,000 of purchases with two or three people who could approve that. And I just don't want to, and I voted against it at the time when I was on the board. There was no oversight there. And the same sort of thing here, I don't want to get so large. I noticed one of the figures is up to $50,000 now that it looks like staff can spend without. Now, it does say council approval at some point, but it looks to me that there are some loopholes in here that it could be an emergency situation or something. And $50,000 to me was getting a little high, just my personal opinion, considering it was $15,000, I think, and then it raised significantly.
want to make sure that we're comfortable with these new figures, the higher figures. And I realize the cost of doing business, everything is getting more expensive. But again, you want a situation, I think, where council is aware of what's being spent, how it's being spent. And if some of these transactions take place because they're under a certain limit, then council is, well, aware once the product arrives, I guess, but not really aware of the process. Councilor Ryan?
Can I ask a question? If we send an e-transfer as a payment, does it show up on the so-called check run report? And then it's not, in other words, it's not a check, it's a payment for sure. But if an e-transfer was sent for something, would it appear on that report?
So not necessarily an e-transfer, but an EFT, electronic funds transfer. If the admin does a batch for that, then okay. That's a separate report, which the mayor does sign off on.
Like when the payment is being made, but there is nothing that comes to the rest of council that would say that, that payment was made if it wasn't done by a check. In other words, our scope should include any outgoing payments, period, regardless of the means that they were done, including if we paid cash, which I know we don't. I'm not saying that, but the control that's there that gives council the information needed to understand what's going on needs to include any form of payment made by the municipality, right, including e-transfers, or there's a variety of names, but I'm talking about the same thing all the time.
Yeah.
So, okay.
No, I agree. And just recently, I guess, I don't know that I've seen it the last couple of times, but there was a separate file for the e-transfer. I don't know whether there's still...
There is, and we haven't been sending
by
electronic.
That's why I haven't seen it.
Yeah, that's...
Okay.
But it is included in the accounts payable.
Is it?
Report that you
okay.
get, yes.
Is that what it's called now? I always call it the check run report.
Yeah.
Okay. So,
yeah.
Okay. Well, that's good. Thank you. I mean, that's good to know.
It's
so.
Just not in there at the moment because we haven't, it was more utilized when we had the postal strike.
Yeah.
So you would have still gotten the same check run report and it would be on there.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
And there is always that lag too, the accounts payable or check run. That money's already been spent and council gets to see it, right?
Correct.
But that's, so if you have a question about it, it's sort of after the fact, but that's the only practical way to do it.
But at least it would indicate that a new control may be required, and I'm not saying it does. I'm just saying if we saw something that was not acceptable, then we could put controls in place to stop it happening again. Right? So.
No, it's excellent to hear, because I believe that we've met a couple of council members here from the previous council. I think there was a resolution on there that they weren't going to see the check run report. The accounts payable wasn't going to be part of the agenda.
That's true.
And I think that was taken care of. But since then, of course, we want to make sure that we still see it. So whether anybody wants to speak to that or not, how important this is that we get to see it?
Absolutely. It's incredibly important because that's the controllership policies and procedures of the township being the final ones that are doing the, overseeing how and what is being spent. So to not have that is doesn't allow us to fulfill our obligations to ensure that, we can with confidence say that if someone questions something, that we feel confident that if we haven't been able to double check ourselves. So I think it saves everybody a lot of anguish when we can actually see the numbers, and anyone questions it, then we're confident that everything is done according to policies and procedures. Yeah, that was disturbing when they tried to take that away from council.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
I don't know the page number that it's on, because the pages, at least on my copy, are not there.
Well, give us a title anyway, or a number.
It's Section 4 under Responsibilities and Authority, and then Section 4... D, I guess D is in Donald. There's a mention there about electronic funds transfer. Again, because I've had a history of this issue, and I think I've even mentioned this before at council, sending a payment by e-transfer is or can be quite secure and immediate, but for the most part, including local businesses that give me invoices and things for stuff, I have repeatedly told them, including people that are friends of mine, that what you're doing is critically vulnerable because of the way that they do it. In other words, there's a feature, and this isn't me talking, this is Interact, which runs the whole system, that you can set up for automatic deposit, it's what it's called, so that if you send me an e-transfer and you send it to the email address that I give you, the money's in my account, I get a notification that it was done, but I don't have any control of it. It cannot be intercepted, period. Whereas e-transfers otherwise can be. In other words, most people think it's more secure to not have auto deposit turned on. And I do this with friends on a regular basis too, and I pull it up on Interact's webpage and say, here, read this, this isn't me, read this. If you don't, then the money gets lost, and both the sender and the receiver, or the expected receiver doesn't get it, and the bank will not give you your money, right? Because you didn't follow the procedures. Auto deposit is safe and secure, and it's immediate. It can't be intercepted simply because if you send me the money's already in my account before anybody else will even know about it, right? And so there's controls like that I think we need to do, and if it's advantageous, I mean, we could have a discussion, I could do it, or I could probably find other people that would do it. Don't buy my word for it. It's just I've got experience dealing with that for a long time, right? And we need to be critical on that, so that if this is about procurement, I would want to see the invoice or whatever that the provider is giving to us specifically indicate for an e-transfer that I'm going to give you this information, this email address. The misspelling by one letter will mean that the money won't get there and it'll go to somebody else if that address exists, and if they take it, you're SOL. So anyhow, I'll be nice and say the nice words, but and that this happens because I follow this online too. I see email stories once a week about people being defrauded out of tens of thousands of dollars because they didn't do relatively simple things. And all I'm saying is we can write a procedure for this, or I can assist with writing a procedure about this to make sure that when we're paying these things, and these would be mostly larger ticket items, we'll have to make sure the money gets to who it's intended to go to and doesn't get stolen by somebody else. And the bank just says, too bad for you. You didn't follow the rules. So
I'll say that the township doesn't send like interacting transfers with an email address. We're doing more direct deposit for electronic funds transfer.
Okay.
There is a form that the vendor has to complete.
Okay.
So they're putting their banking information
yeah.
within it, and they're
yeah.
sending it back to us.
Okay.
I'll also mention, too, that the treasurer prefers to do payment by check just because the funds are in our account a bit longer, accruing interest. So he does not do EFT batches very often. It's only in certain circumstances where the vendor is requesting it or in other circumstances, but I'll say that the township is primarily still paying vendors by check.
My whole point about this is just to make sure that we have appropriate controls, not excessive controls, just controls to make sure that we don't end up being out the money and creating some ill will, which they always do, because both sides are then blaming the other, and then that doesn't help any of us. So,
well, that's good that checking with the vendor, too, that they provide that to you, because if the vendor doesn't provide it, then what are you going to do?
Well, and lots of them are quite casual about it. I have a fellow, doesn't matter, he's been a contractor for me for the last 5 or 6 years, and finally he sent me a new one, and I'm saying, this is not what you sent me last time, number one, and the information isn't the same as what you sent me last time. He said, yeah, it is. I said, no, it isn't, right? Because the other thing is, if I set up an e-transfer in my banking system or in the bank system, that person will, or organization will stay in there, so I can, and because I knew I made regular payments to them, I just looked at the last one, I'm going, this isn't the same. I phoned him, I got him on the phone right away, and he says, it is the same. I said, no, it's not. Here's what you said, and now there's what you're saying. So, and there's only him. It's, you know, a business for self. It's not like there's 20 other people in the department or something, so.
Okay, looking at just a few clauses here. 512. The one note that's added for number one, at the discretion of clerk administrator. You talked about the 5-year ban. I'm just thinking of a situation where, if it's a monopoly supplier, thinking of our winter sand in particular, what we ask for, and there's usually only one supplier that can give us that.
be changed from the clerk to council. The previous, the current procurement bylaw does have the clerk giving those authorities,
right.
But that can be changed to council as well.
Okay.
Yeah, that was in my notes. I know it's not.
Just under 4.402A about tenders and proposals and bids in consultation with clerk administrator and or deputy clerk. I'm just wondering if it wouldn't be beneficial. Would that still come before council before it went, the tender went out? I'm just thinking of different things that had been tenders were made and. You know, the more eyes, the better sometimes. Things were missed and we didn't find out till after the fact.
Could that be done through an email circulation or would it have to be approved at a council meeting?
Just thinking it would be good if council could see it before it was posted.
So we could circulate it prior to it being posted?
And what you want to be careful of course, is doing business through email.
Yeah. So we couldn't have it at a council meeting on our agenda?
It may just slow the procurement process, and a lot of the tenders we do are annual ones. That
yeah, I'm just meaning like big project things, like maybe roads or
yeah,
things like that.
Yeah, capital projects we could do.
Big project, because in the past I know that
right.
Things were missed.
And some capital ones are done by like an engineering firm.
Mm-hmm.
Would those also be included? And once that council
well, I think it would be good if council actually seen the before it got posted.
Okay.
Does it, anybody else think?
No, what I tend to do, I see them posted, and then if I have any comments, I usually write over and say, if we amend this. But you're right, it's already posted.
Yeah, point. Wouldn't it be better if we seen it before it was posted,
yeah.
So that if there was any comment, you know, any changes need to be made?
Yeah, it's just a question, I guess.
It doesn't have to be council. It couldn't be just be the mayor.
Okay.
Yeah,
no,
but just
terrible.
No, but it. I think it needs to have, you know, the more eyes on it, they may see something that has slipped.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
Yeah,
because we've been burned in the past. That's all I'm thinking.
If it's something technical and that you catch it, if it's actually changing, you know, the request or expectations and that sort of thing, that's. I'm not sure if individuals. Would be commenting on that without the council's support. So
yeah.
It makes it difficult. As you say, it slows down everything. But
in the long run, say like, you know, entrances that maybe get missed or
right.
Different things like that, right? And then they're tacked on later or something.
Right.
Yeah, because sort of on those lines, like, you know, there's a lot of reference to except as provided in this bylaw. And then it mentions, I think, with approval of council, but it never mentions how that process takes place. You know, is it through a resolution or is it a bylaw? You know, if there's it never goes into detail. Like even when it's in the definitions, it never describes that process of unless authorized by council. So. Even if in the definitions it provided a little more detail of how that authorization by council, is it just three council members that are talking and they authorize something? Like it doesn't provide the details.
Hmm. Was there previously a committee of council for procurement because the old bylaw referenced a bid committee?
Hmm. Probably not for quite a few years.
I don't know if that would be a solution as well, like have a subcommittee to review tenders, attend openings, kind of facilitate procurement on behalf of council.
You see my eyebrows raising?
No.
Well, our council isn't big.
Right.
So I don't really, the more committees you have, the more problems I think you have. So I think, even you know, if it comes before council as a draft tender, and the council can look at it, and see if it looks okay, because in the end we're ultimately responsible. Like you might have done up the tender, but we were the ones that are going, why did the stupid council do that, right?
Right, but then in the end too, council ultimately awards the tender, so if there was something that they didn't agree with, within the tender that could just not award as well, another check and balance. But I totally get kind of correcting that before you get to the award.
Yeah.
Councilor Ryan?
Yeah. A number of places throughout the document we refer to either the township or the corporation, and I know both are defined in the document, but honestly, and it's a simple process just searching for it, is it would be smarter, in my view, to simply refer to the township or the corporation. I don't have a preference really for either one, just that we do it consistently, right? And we can just do a find and replace and do that. And I also noticed that council itself is not a definition in the definition section. I don't think it's hard to describe, but I think we probably should, because it's kind of pertinent given all the references in the document to it, right? So, and again, I don't think it needs to be more than a single line. Just why not? If it's a common term, then put it in the definition. So, I know corporation and township are adequately described in there, and I don't really have a problem with using both, but why, right? I would just clean it up like that, but.
I think I'm noticing on, just jumping ahead here, 804.2. This is for informal quotations, either 15,000 or 20, I'm not sure yet. It talks about these purchases do not require formal advertising or the receipt of sealed bids. Quotations shall be reviewed, doesn't say by whom, and the results tabulated to determine the award of the contract for same. Now, if it was up to 20,000, this is where I think the figures are getting a little high, especially if it doesn't have to be advertised, and somebody reviews them, and then there's some kind of statement made. You talked about the award of the contract for same. It may be informal, but that's a fair amount of money. So. Mm-hmm. And I'm just noticing that at different locations. Whether they're all marked out or not. Summary of the tenders received, including the names of the bidders, time of receipt, completeness of submissions, shall be prepared and may be included in a subsequent report to council.
I'll change that to will.
Yeah.
Only where they want council to know. I'm kidding. I'm not criticizing. So.
Sure.
I'm not. I think it's clear what the intent is, but we should say it, so.
I'm under 811, emergency purchases. I'm just wondering if this is consistent. It talks about $25,000. And then down below, under 812, I think this was left in, so I'm just not sure if it was a mistake from earlier, 812B. This is sole source purchase, but it talks about 15,000 and then has 25 in brackets. Now, sole source there for 15,000, I guess, if that's the figure, or maybe it's 25, requires council approval. And yet, emergency for 25,000 doesn't. Report comes to council afterwards in the emergency. And I know that the problem arises, of course, when you have something that comes up and council doesn't meet. Well, we meet every couple of weeks, which is good. I don't know how these councils do it, they meet monthly. But.
So,
Councilor Dula?
if there is an emergency and the clerk administrator would approve it, it would, if it wasn't in the budget? Do you know?
I wouldn't personally.
No, well, that's what I'm wondering, because I think in the past there was something purchased and it was and it was considered an emergency, and I don't believe it was in the budget. But I just want to know for now, for the future, like if there was an emergency and it wasn't in the budget, is there somewhere that it should be, you know, there that at least the mayor, not necessarily all of council, the clerk administrator in consultation with the mayor or whoever, or, you know, three people or something?
Yeah, I think at this point I call a special meeting to have that purchase approved.
Okay.
Again, I don't know what the emergency situation is. Maybe all of council couldn't come to a meeting, but I think that would be my first step, is calling a special meeting. And then if all council weren't able to attend, then likely I would consult with the mayor.
Yeah, it's just so that the clerk administrator, or if you weren't here, the deputy clerk, would just go out on their own and say, yeah, okay, go ahead and get it. You know, without anybody knowing.
I don't think either.
I don't think so either, but it's been done in the past. So. That's why I'm bringing it up.
On 17, the canoe. Now, we haven't really had an opportunity to speak to that after the presentation. Just the way it's worded.
So the wording came from CANU. They require that in our procurement bylaw to sign us up, so that's where the wording came from.
And I'm wondering, with that too, I'm just trying to get clarification, because I think somewhere it talked about we'd still have service with locals. My concern is, I guess, that local companies whom we often purchase from, if they have the equipment, they'd be excluded if they don't belong to. They couldn't bid on it, I think, because CANU has to have them. That's where they make their money, from the suppliers actually becoming a member. And so my concern would be, I guess, we like local in the sense that we do get service, as opposed to buying somewhere out west. And then they expect maybe one of their subsidiaries or whatever to provide the service, but you don't always get the same if you don't buy from the local company. So I guess that's a concern. I don't want to exclude any of the local companies who decide not to belong to CANU. I'm not sure how many do. Do we even have a list of which local companies, suppliers, belong to this group?
No, but I will say most of the seven municipalities are working with CANU, so on their website they have it posted that they are within the procurement, CANU procurement group and LAS, so local dealers are aware that a lot of municipalities are using this, and then I think that is a way that they can go to sign up, because they realize a lot of Lois First Time municipalities are using this. But no, I do not have a specific list of local dealers who are signed up with CANU currently.
Would they have that? CANU?
I can go on their website and look. Their website is wide open, so you can see.